dedicated volunteers. Essentia Health Fauston has its 21st annual Tree Walk for Hospice Sunday, November 30th at Miguelson Elementary School. The Fauston Langbee Lions Club has a pancake breakfast from 10 to noon with a remembrance program and candle lighting ceremony at 12:15. Attendees can stroll through decorated Christmas trees and bid in a silent auction. The Arrowhead Library System presents Songs of Mesabi, a musical journey through the Iron Range with Greg Tiberzi, now through December 10th. Find a list of dates, times, and locations at alslib.info. Lights in the Pines is a drive-through holiday light display at the Itasca County Fairgrounds in Grand Rapids. Hours are 5 to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays between Thanksgiving and Christmas. After seeing the lights, you may park and explore North Pole Junction inside the fair's commercial building. The Iron Range Area Council of Minnesota Chippewa Tribes has their annual Christmas party Thursday, December 4th at 6 p.m. at Marble City Hall. Enjoy a potluck dinner and native bingo. Now back to Morning Edition.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. President Trump is sending top aides to Moscow and Kyiv to try to work out an agreement to end Russia's war in Ukraine. The U.S.-backed proposal was seen as too favorable for Russia, but it's being modified with input from Ukrainian and European leaders. Trump says they're close to an agreement. NPR's Franco Ordonez has more.
Trump now says that there are only a few remaining points of disagreement. He said last night that he's dispatching his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and maybe even his son-in-law to Moscow to meet with President Putin. And then he's sending Army Secretary Dan Driscoll to meet with the Ukrainians.
NPR's Franco Ordonez. The office of the Israeli prime minister says Israel has positively identified the remains of a body released from Gaza. The release is part of the U.S.-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. The remains were that of a 48-year-old man who was killed at his home in the October 7th attack. The U.S.-backed ceasefire in Gaza is holding for the seventh week, but the U.N. says a quarter of people living there still only eat one meal a day, and hospitals still lack basic medicines. NPR's Anis Baba reports.
On the surface, Gaza looks like it's being restocked after months of deprivation. There is more food entering Gaza, and trucks are bringing sodas, sweets, cosmetics, and even the latest smartphones from Israeli merchants. But the Israeli government restricts the essentials from entering, as antibiotics and fuel remain out of reach for most. And Gaza's civil defense say their cars have run out of fuel for rescue operations. Meanwhile, people in Gaza are waking up cold and wet, without tents to sleep under, as streets flood with rain. The UN says tons of winter clothes, bedding, and shelter supplies are waiting for Israeli clearance. But the aid groups are facing bureaucratic obstacles to getting supplies in, and only 32 trucks entered Gaza last week. Israel says it's facilitating aid in line with the ceasefire. Anas Baba, NPR News, Gaza.
20 states are suing the Trump administration over cuts to long-term housing for homeless people. The shift comes with new restrictions that states say are illegal. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
The federal housing agency HUD wants to shift billions of dollars away from permanent housing toward transitional housing, and it says it will deny funding to programs that promote DEI, acknowledge people who are transgender or non-binary, or don't cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. The lawsuit by the mostly Democratic-led states says those conditions are unlawful, and it says Congress mandated that homelessness funding be distributed based solely on need. HUD Secretary Scott Turner has said the funding changes are about promoting self-sufficiency. Advocates for ending homelessness say the overhaul could push 170,000 people back onto the streets. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News. The makers of Buy Hard baby formula say all of its products may be contaminated with botulism. It tested 36 samples from three different lots and found five samples contained the type of bacteria that can lead to the rare and potentially deadly illness. At least 31 babies in 15 states who consumed Buy Hard formula fell ill since the botulism outbreak began in August. Ahead of Thanksgiving, President Trump utilized a power only he has, the presidential pardon. Yesterday, he took part in the time-honored White House tradition and pardoned two Thanksgiving turkeys. NPR's Deepa Shivaram has more.
The two turkeys, Waddle and Gobble, were spared a future of being eaten. At a ceremony in the Rose Garden, President Trump said the turkeys weighed about 50 pounds each. His remarks were interrupted a few times by a gobble from Gobble.
Today, we continue a time-honored American tradition. Well, that's a well-trained turkey. See how happy he is? In a few moments, I will grant a full, absolute, and unconditional presidential pardon to two handsome Thanksgiving turkeys.
The turkeys will spend the rest of their lives at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. The president, for his part, will spend his holiday in Florida. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, The White House.
AAA expects the number of Americans traveling this week will set a new record, with most of them traveling by car. The FAA says this could be the biggest Thanksgiving for air travel in 15 years. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
KEXE went on the air in 1976. This year, we lost federal funding like all of public media, but you have come forward. You have told us that KEXE matters. We're grateful for all of you, and especially for the folks that have been here from the beginning, people like Michael Goldberg and Gail Addison.
You know, for me and Gail, it's really been two things, a fabulous music education, of all the music that we never imagined or knew anything about, and we're learning still every week. And then the other thing, of course, is that everybody we know through KEXE.
Yeah, we've made a lot of decisions in our life based on having access to this radio station. An extremely rare opportunity to learn a new skill and to share your love of music and to meet so many people through this station as well.
Support KEXE now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. President Trump's latest Russia-Ukraine peace plan appeared to be making headway, with Secretary of State Marco Rubio praising it and Special Envoy Steve Witkoff planning a visit to Moscow.
Then we learned something about the process leading to this moment. Bloomberg published a transcript of a phone call between Steve Witkoff and an advisor to Russian President Vladimir Putin. The news service says it listened to a recording and made that transcript. NPR has not independently confirmed the story. The transcript gives insight into how Witkoff encouraged Russia to manage President Trump and includes his suggestion to develop a peace plan. Coming up, we'll hear from the most recent U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who resigned earlier this year. We start with that Bloomberg report.
We're going to go now to NPR's Eleanor Beardsley, who is following all this from Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. Good morning, Eleanor.
Good morning, Michelle.
So when did this call happen and who was on it?
Well, it took place in mid-October. It was between envoy Steve Witkoff and Yuri Ushakov, who's an advisor to Russian President Vladimir Putin. And it was right after Trump sanctioned Russia's two biggest oil companies. And Witkoff is right off his success in the Middle East and suggests there could be a similar deal between Russia and Ukraine. And he encourages Ushakov to get Putin to call Trump, praise his Mideast peace deal, and flatter him. Witkoff also mentions Zelensky is coming to the White House soon. He suggests a call with the Russians beforehand. And we know now, Michelle, that that call from Putin the day before Zelensky's arrival ended any hope Ukrainians had of Tomahawk missiles. And, Michelle, there's a second recording and transcript of Ushakov with fellow Russian Kirill Dmitriev, Putin's economic advisor, talking about that 28-point U.S.-Russian peace plan from last week that was seen as favoring Russia and has now been heavily amended. It seems it was the Russian plan, after all, pushed by these two men, though we cannot confirm that the Trump administration did not make changes. But in the call, economic advisor Dmitriev even says, according to Bloomberg, quote, I don't think they'll take exactly our version, but at least it'll be as close to it as possible.
As close to it as possible. Okay, so how are Ukrainians taking this in?
Well, I spoke with Ukrainian parliament member and chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Oleksandr Moreshko. He actually called for Witkoff to be replaced 6 months ago because what he says is his incompetence and complete lack of knowledge of Ukraine and the origins of the war. So he's not surprised about the latest. Let's listen.
We know that we're dealing with people in the entourage of President Trump who take pro-Russian position, unfortunately, and we knew it long before that. But we have to deal with the team of President Trump, no matter who they are.
And what does President Trump have to say about this?
Well, on Air Force One, Trump didn't address concerns that Witkoff may be pro-Russian, but he brushed off concerns about his methods.
I haven't heard it, but I heard it was standard negotiation. And I would imagine he's saying the same thing to Ukraine, because each party has to give and take.
You know, Trump's reaction shocked Moreshko more. He believes Trump should remove Witkoff because he says he is discrediting his administration and the U.S. in the eyes of the world.
So do you have a sense of, I know this just news just broke, but is there any sense of how these revelations might affect this negotiation? Could it derail things?
Well, Moreshko says not on the Ukrainian side, but he says Putin will reject any peace plan that lets Ukraine survive as a sovereign state. Here he is again.
He thinks that he is winning and he cannot stop because any peace might cause domestic problems for him. He believes that he might lose power because of that.
Now, Putin envoy Dmitriev calls the Bloomberg leaks fake, while another Russian official said they were leaked to, quote, hinder U.S.-Russia relations.
That is Eleanor Beardsley for NPR in Kyiv. Eleanor, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Now let's turn to Bridget Brink. She was ambassador to Slovakia in President Trump's first term, then the ambassador to Ukraine under President Biden, and for a little while under President Trump. She resigned from the ambassador's post in May of this year, citing concerns over Trump's handling of the war. She's now running for Congress in Michigan as a Democrat. Ambassador, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Glad you're with us. Noting again that NPR has not confirmed the details of the Bloomberg report, but they've published a transcript, and it shows Steve Witkoff doing roughly three things. He says, let's make a peace plan that you Russians like. He says, clearly you're going to get the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine as part of this. And he also says, let's get you on the line with President Trump before he meets President Zelensky, and here is how to flatter my boss. What do you make of all that?
Well, it's normal for negotiators to talk to both sides in any negotiation. But what's not normal is the way in which the U.S. negotiator, which Steve Witkoff, is advising the Russian side, as if Russia is not the aggressor in the largest threat to peace and security in Europe since World War II. I led negotiations with Russia over the course of my career. And it's usual for any U.S. negotiator to articulate the U.S. position, to advance U.S. interests, and that's nowhere to be found in this transcript.
Not advancing U.S. interests, but just on the matter of advice. I mean, the Russian asks for advice. Witkoff gives some advice. Here's how you handle Donald Trump. I can see how that seems a little weird, but wouldn't you like the Russians to be taking American advice?
I think the main advice that I would have given in that situation is that the most important issue for America is ensuring that this war ends and doesn't restart. So we all agree that the war should end, but it matters to us how it ends. I spent 3 years under Putin's missiles and drones as our ambassador there, and every night I and the rest of the country was awoken by air raid sirens as Putin launched missiles and drones at the Capitol, hitting apartments, playgrounds, churches, and I witnessed the truly horrific war crimes that were committed by Putin and by Russia. And when President Trump kept appeasing Putin, I knew I couldn't stay. I had to resign and speak out, but also run for Congress, because I believe we need to fight for freedom and democracy at home and abroad. And we cannot be an America that is undermining our own democracy destabilizing our economy, taking away health care, and making life harder and more expensive for our families.
Well,
and
given
we need
that
to stand
you,
up and given speak
the,
out.
Given that you experienced those missile strikes, maybe you have thoughts about this. Steve Witkoff says, according to this transcript published by Bloomberg, quote, I told the president that you, that the Russian Federation has always wanted a peace deal. That's my belief. I told the president I believe that, Steve Witkoff said to the Russian official. Do you believe the Russian Federation wants a peace deal?
Absolutely not. There is no indication that Russia wants a deal. And that's the whole point, that peace at any price, which is what appears to be our position as the United States, is not peace. It's appeasement. And appeasing a dictator never has and never will achieve a lasting peace. We know that from 1938. Trump promised to end the war on day one, but it's been a year, and Putin has only escalated. Just two nights ago, he launched a major attack with almost 500 drones and also missiles that killed seven people in the capital and around the country in Ukraine. So any peace, any deal, is only going to be in our interests if it achieves a lasting and enduring peace. And that is going to require security for Ukraine and justice as well.
Well, I'm thinking this through. It does appear that the United States has pressed Ukraine to accept that they've lost some territory. Maybe they don't give it up formally, but they accept that they've lost it. The United States has pressed Ukraine to accept the idea that they have some security guarantee that is short of being a member of NATO. So the Ukrainians have been pushed to some concessions. Do you see any sign that Russia has been willing to give up a single thing that they've been demanding since the start of the war?
There is no sign. And in fact, the original agreement, the 28 points, which, as we know from the media, has now been negotiated to a smaller number of points. But the original agreement, that one that sounds like it was the topic of the conversation with our negotiator and with the Russians, was Putin's dream wish list that was said even by our Secretary of State. So there is no indication that the Russians have given up on their overarching goal, which is actually to undermine Ukraine's sovereignty and also undermine the security architecture that has kept Europe and America peaceful since World War II.
I'm curious if there is something real, though, in the way that Steve Witkoff describes things in this October call. So this is a number of weeks ago. He's talking in the most general terms in a 5-minute phone call about the peace deal. And he says, I kind of summarize here, you guys get the Donbass, Eastern Ukraine, and maybe there's going to be some kind of land swaps and we're going to get this done. Is that actually the outline of a peace deal?
I believe the peace deal needs to first consider security, that the security issue is the most important. That's the most important to Ukraine, but it's really also the most important to us. What we should be thinking about is how do we make sure that this war can't restart? As Reagan would say, trust but verify. We cannot, history has shown that we cannot trust Putin or Russia. And so the first question is how to stop this war and ensure that it stops for good.
Wait a minute. So you're saying the administration seems to be focused a little more on who gets what real estate, but the actual question is how do you make another war impossible?
Exactly.
Do you think, though, that the Ukrainians will have to give up some territory in practice, if not in legal fact, as a part of this settlement?
I think that the focus really has to be on how to make sure that this war does not restart. And then all other questions, territory and other questions, can be considered. But the most important one is security, because that's the most important one for the United States. We do not want to see a repeat of the last century of wars in Europe. And what Putin is doing is laying the groundwork so that the war not only won't end, but will restart either in another year, 5 years, 10 years.
You said at the beginning that you felt that Witkoff failed to articulate the U.S. interest here. He talked about what Russia might want, what a deal might look like, how to flatter Donald Trump, but not about the U.S. interest. In a few sentences, what is the fundamental U.S. interest, what the U.S. needs out of this agreement, if anything?
I think fundamentally it's to ensure that the war cannot restart. And there's a way to do that, but the way to do it is to turn up the pressure on Putin and Russia by ramping up sanctions, using the $300 billion in sovereign assets in Europe to buy more weapons, create U.S. jobs, and allow Ukraine to defend itself now and in the future, and also work with Europe on a security guarantee that we also can support.
Bridget Brink is the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She's now running for Congress in Michigan. Ambassador, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
You are listening to Morning Edition here on the Wednesday Morning Show on KAXE KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle. And in just a bit, I'll be joined by Heather Johnson. And we'll be your morning show hosts until 9 o'clock, where we hand things over to DJ Deng for Headwaters. United Way of Bemidji Area's Holiday Gifts for Kids program is now accepting new unwrapped gifts for those aged newborn through 17. Donations may be dropped at several locations in Bemidji now until December 8th. Find more information and registration forms for families at UnitedWayBemidji.org. Crosby has their community tree lighting Friday, December 5th at 5 p.m. in Marketplace Plaza. Enjoy hot chocolate and other goodies. Concordia Language Villages near Bemidji has their International Holiday Market December 4th through the 7th and December 11th through 14th from 10 to 6 each day. Shop ornaments, apparel, food, and more from 14 different cultures. There is a free full Thanksgiving meal at the Brainerd American Legion Post 255 this Thursday from 11 to 1 p.m., hosted by the Brainerd Legion, Elks, VFW, and Eagles clubs. Delivery is also available. And listen to the Season Watch Pod with hosts Charlie Mitchell, Heidi Holton, John Latimer, and a rotating cast of characters. Season Watch Pod, for the curious, filled with the delights of nature. New episodes come out on Thursdays. Now more from Morning Edition here on KAXE KBXE.
For NPR comes from this station. And from Arm, committed to delivering innovative, advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm. Arm.com. From the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity, regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org. From Luminescence Foundation, Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Leila Fadel. The actor Richard Gere became a sex symbol with his role in American Gigolo.
Often in these big hotels, you run into women from foreign countries who may need a translator or a guide.
And they hire you?
Yes.
After his turns in Pretty Woman and Chicago, he became an icon.
I don't care about expensive things.
Away from movie sets, Gere is also an activist, a lifelong Buddhist, and he's advocated for Tibetan rights since the early 1980s. And he's executive producer of the new film Wisdom of Happiness, in which the 14th Dalai Lama speaks direct to camera.
This camera?
Yes. Here?
Okay.
The film is currently being released on a North American tour, and I caught up with Gere in Washington, D.C.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Leila.
Hey,
nice
Leila.
To meet you.
Richard Gere, thank you so much for talking to us.
Well, thank you.
Where he was advocating for Tibet in Congress.
I think the way to see this film is with other people. When the lights come up, people look at each other differently. We can actually live with each other without fear, with a sense of gratitude, sense of kindness, and we can work through our problems without the craziness.
In our mind, very strong concept of we and they. It is the source of problems. War, killing. We are brothers, sisters. How can we kill each other?
You have this central interview with His Holiness, which is unique.
Because it is 90 minutes of him.
It's only his voice. Not seeing him on a pedestal, but seeing him as us.
Even him talking about his childhood, too.
Yeah.
Being a kid who was not always great in lessons and like needing his mom.
No, he said he's very mischievous.
Yeah.
And his relationship with a difficult father.
Yes.
Who is very strict, but learning compassion from this extraordinary mother.
How did you first meet?
We met in Dharamsala in 81. You know, I had been a practicing Buddhist, but I had read some Tibetan material. It turned out I had a friend who had been writing a book about the Tibetans in exile. I said, go to Dharamsala. His Holiness is there. Other lamas are there. I met His Holiness, and we had maybe a 45-minute, one-hour talk.
Yeah.
And it radically changed the direction of my life. So he said, my brother tells me you're an actor. And that's like the last thing I want to talk about. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, this acting is a lot about emotions, isn't it? I said, yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, so when you're crying, are you really crying? When you're angry, are you really, really angry? When you're laughing, are you really delighted? Yeah, I mean, it makes it a better performance, more believable.
Yeah.
But he said, you're making those emotions. What a powerful mirror to put in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the suggestion was we create emotions. There's nothing particularly real about them other than the story.
And what we do with that story.
Exactly. If we know we're creating emotions, mm-hmm. so there's some distance and we're not carried away by it.
Our world needs knowledge about our mind, about our emotions, and how to tackle these emotions.
Can I ask about your own faith journey and what attracted you to the practice of Buddhism?
I witnessed suffering inside myself,
yeah.
and every place else. And, I used to call it a dissonance. Why are we here? What's the point?
Yeah.
I think everybody goes through that. But the difference was is that I maybe searched a little more than most.
We've talked about Tibet, but there are all of these quite awful conflicts going on around the world. I'm just wondering how you're thinking about putting this into the world, where you're telling people, watch it in community, in this moment where it feels like the idea of community is falling apart.
You asked before, how did I get involved with this world?
Yeah.
That was a year and a half ago. In the meantime, our world has radically changed for the worse. We hope it's just a pendulum swing that will come back, but there's no guarantee of that. So working on this film, it's more than a testament to an extraordinary man. It's medicine. It's a corrective. Human beings are kind. We don't lean towards cruelty. We lean away from cruelty.
But we do it a lot.
We do it because we are a bit demented now as a culture, as a planet.
Hmm.
I probably shouldn't say this, but leaning towards someone like Trump is not in our best service.
Hmm.
That's leaning towards dark. It's leaning towards cruelty, leaning towards the opposite of warmth, kindness, compassion.
Is this a film for everyone?
This isn't a Buddhist film.
You don't see it as a Buddhist film?
Not at all.
Say more.
Well, I think this is just how people can live with each other.
Yeah. This film is also about Tibet. You've been a major advocate and activist around Tibet for a long time now, and I know it's cost you at times in Hollywood.
People keep saying that.
Is that not true?
It's like, I suppose so, but it's not.
But you've done pretty good.
It's like nothing. You know, I've been so fortunate. You know, I'm one of the blessed people life that I have. I have not suffered
You're right.
by the Chinese. No, not at all.
Is the film a call to action of any sort?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So let's end on that. When people walk out of this film, what is it that you hope?
The Holiness is very clear that delusions don't go away by themselves. You have to do the work. The Buddha said, look, I've shown you the path. You got to walk it, and you're enlightened.
Yeah.
You have to do the work.
I mean, faith is a practice.
And it doesn't mean you have to be a Buddhist. If you want to change the world, prayer is very powerful, no question about it. But it's probably not going to change your world, certainly not today and tomorrow. You got to be in the world. Nonviolence is not weak. Nonviolence is powerful, strong, creative, and very committed. Takes a lot of courage. The other strategies we have in life take us to weak, kind of stupid places, even when they appear to be so tough.
That's actor Richard Gere. He's an executive producer behind the new documentary Wisdom of Happiness featuring the 14th Dalai Lama. The film is currently being released on a rolling North American tour.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
In the new film Eternity, actress Davine Joy Randolph plays an afterlife coordinator named Anna.
Like a social worker in purgatory, basically. They're the person that helps you figure out where you would like to spend eternity.
The catch, as the title suggests, that decision is final. I'm Juana Summers. That conversation on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And you can hear All Things Considered later today at 4 o'clock with your local host today. It will be Heidi Holton. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with the Heather Johnson. And we did it. We made it, folks.
We did. Good morning. The yeah. Heather Johnson?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But yeah, it's blustery out there. That's for sure.
It's kind of warm. It's snowman weather.
It is snowman weather.
Yeah.
How were the roads for you?
Not good.
Not good? Yeah.
Not good at all.
I only had to drive like 8 blocks and it got yeah. rough when I got downtown.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't nice in some areas, but, you know, they have the plows going and we'll get some salt out and it'll be okay by, you know.
Yeah, we'll have that party mid-morning. Today, this morning yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just a heads up, we are under a winter storm warning advisory in effect until noon today. 2 additional inches of snow possible, winds gusting up to 40 miles per hour. Slippery road conditions are expected, colder temperatures moving in on Wednesday, or that's today. And announcement that the Bemidji Community Food Shelf is closed today due to weather. And I know a bunch of schools are probably closed today.
Bemidji's closed, I believe.
So we'll try to keep you up to date on what's closed today. Otherwise, weather today should be mostly cloudy, highs near 27 degrees, breezy northwest winds, 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusts up to 35. Tonight, mostly cloudy, blustery northwest winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour, lows near 17. Tomorrow, Thursday, Thanksgiving, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid-20s, northwest winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour, evening lows in the low teens, and then Friday, mostly cloudy with highs near 23 degrees and a calm wind.
Yeah, not so bad for Thanksgiving travel.
You know who I blame for this?
I hope it's not me.
The person that kept telling me, like, oh, I can't believe the weather we've been having here in November. It is not even an inch of snow, and then all of a sudden we get this snowstorm.
Is it a specific person?
It's a stranger that just started talking to me kind of situation.
Oh no. Yeah. That's bad news.
So maybe they were a, I don't know, a sign of things to come. Like if it was
harbinger.
A movie, that would make sense.
Absolutely. Some kind of nefarious dealings. Andrew, isn't this weather awfully nice for the time of year?
It'd be a shame if something were to happen. Also, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving from all of us at KXE, KBXE. What are you grateful for this year? You can text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear it from you, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. What are you grateful for, Andrew?
I'm grateful for all the amazing supporters we had this year.
Yeah.
When we were in need of help, the community came out and helped us and showed us how much they appreciate KXE, KBXE, and I'm very grateful for it.
Me too. And it wasn't just the donations. It was just the encouragement, just the community, but like literally walking in the door.
Yeah, that was really...
It was amazing.
Yes. So what are you wearing on your head?
Excuse me? Andrew, it's radio. Why are you pretending I have something on my head? It's a festive holiday drumstick headband.
Turkey legs.
I actually wore this in a 5K, so we had we had family drumstick heads, and I just figured, well, you know,
today's the day.
Today's the day. It's coming out of the closet, and I think it's rather festive, and it makes me taller, which I love.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a little strange, but you know.
Well, now it just makes me hungry for turkey.
Yeah, so it's perfect. You're ready for the holiday. You're
Heather,
ready to go.
I can't be hungry at 6:33. We've got a long show ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like in the cartoon, right? When the you know, they're on a desert island and the two characters are looking at each other and one of them becomes a roast turkey.
I've seen the ones where they become like a hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great bit. One of my other favorite cartoon bits is the pie on the windowsill. And, like,
yes.
The characters like float up in the air from the smell and glide over towards the pie.
Was that actually a thing at one point? The shelf outside the kitchen window?
It has to be.
Pie cooling? That was a real thing?
It has to be.
I just don't know.
Where else would you cool a pie?
Like on the kitchen table?
Luckily, technology has finally caught up with
pie technology.
Pie cooling technology.
I mean, this we're living in the future right now for pie technology.
So let us know, did you ever let a pie cool on the windowsill? We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, furthermore, did a bear snatch it?
Yeah, call it. Text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. Programming on KXE KBXE is supported in part by MinSure, offering Minnesotans the opportunity to find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if they qualify for no-cost or low-cost insurance. Expert advice is also available. The enrollment deadline is December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Information and enrollment are online at mnsure.org.
Starting in 2026, tax rules related to charitable giving are shifting. This means right now might be the right time to give to KAXE and other nonprofits. Check with a financial advisor to see if it is a good time for you to make a gift. Your support keeps people-powered radio strong and ensures a bright future for KAXE.
Later in the show today, we have Area Voices. I talked with Eric Sundin about the percussion ensemble that'll be going on next week on December 5th. Now it's time for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of New Mexico's congressional delegation and Pueblo leaders held a press conference in Albuquerque last week to urge Department of Interior Secretary Doug Burgum to visit Chaco Culture National Historical Park in the state and to continue protections from oil and gas drilling. KUNM's Jeanette Didios has more.
In October, the Bureau of Land Management began a process to revoke protections for 10 miles around Chaco Canyon to allow for possible oil and gas exploration. This comes after the New Mexico Congressional Delegation and Pueblo governors held a press conference in front of the U.S. Capitol in September to demand that the Trump administration protect Chaco. Governor of the Picaris Pueblo, Craig Quinchello, spoke on the cultural significance of Chaco.
Our ancestors lived there, prayed there, studied the stars there, and carried teachings outward into our modern Pueblo communities. Our ties to Chaco live in our songs, our ceremonies, our pilgrimages, and our ancient roads and shrines that stretch far beyond the park itself.
U.S. Senators Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan were in attendance alongside Representative Melanie Stansberry. Stansberry said during the federal shutdown, tribal leaders were unable to reach the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but did receive a letter from the Trump administration informing them that they had 2 weeks to respond to Chaco being taken out of the federal protection.
Can you imagine the cruelty, the insensitivity, the stupidity of an administration contacting tribal leaders as they are trying to figure out how they are going to feed their people and balance their budgets and keep their public safety in order, to tell them that they are going to take away their most sacred lands and open it up for private oil and gas drilling.
Congressional and Pueblo leaders invited Burgum to visit Chaco and to have a meaningful talk with them. I'm Jeanette Didios.
A Kodiak, Alaska-based nonprofit dedicated to supporting families with newborns is expanding into the Northwest Arctic Burrow. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more on how Kodiak Kindness is helping families across the state raise babies.
For years, Noya Kwanda Baltazar has been teaching infants in Kotzebue through a local program that serves children with disabilities or delayed development. It's the only such program based out of a school district in the state. Baltazar says it's about helping kids from birth to 3 years old and their families around the Manilik service area, which covers 12 communities in northwest Alaska from Kotzebue to Kobuk.
Working with birth to three, it's always good about helping families, ensuring that they're strong, supported, and any way we can support families and nursing moms to help their babies grow, I think is great.
Baltazar and Francis Williams from Ambler are bringing their experience working with children to Kodiak Kindness as they continue doing what they already do, but under the new title of peer counselors.
I'll be able to do my own mix, you know, with Kodiak Kindness and my Inupiaq traditions.
Williams says she uses native plants like stinkweed or spruce trees to make salves or other traditional medicines to help her friends, family, and neighbors heal from the land. Aside from the traditional knowledge Williams has from her mom and aunties, she'll also be able to help her community with assistance from a certified lactation consultant if she wants support virtually from the Kodiak Kindness team via telehealth. Kodiak Kindness's two new peer counselors in the Northwest Arctic Borough come online this winter and hope to start enrolling families in the region early next year. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kohonic Broadcast Corporation, funded by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Coming up, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition. They're going to be talking about cures for long car rides and Jingle Bells origins.
Oh, interesting.
What do you think it is?
Horses, probably.
Yeah, they have to wear them, like, instead of car horns, they had Jingle Bells?
Absolutely, of course.
Interesting.
I don't know.
If I you can put a bell on. Up, jingle horse, pick up your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is starting to add up. The signs are there.
You'd know if your neighbors were coming to visit. So it's polite. You could probably hear them a couple miles off.
So let me throw this at you. There was somebody that was talking the other day of just like how Sundays used to be a time where like people would go and like visit their friends and neighbors.
Yeah. Visiting.
Yeah. Why do you think we don't do that anymore? Is it football?
I think everyone's running around doing everything all the time. And
on Sundays?
Weekends are precious.
They are precious.
Yeah.
Would you like to bring it back?
Maybe. I mean, I still visit people on Sundays sometimes, I guess.
You never visit me.
Oh, I've never been invited.
That's the point of the visiting.
I'm not one
people
to show up. All right. Well, you asked for it.
I'm just sitting in my pajamas drinking coffee and all of a sudden you show up.
I'm going to be like, come back to the studio. I need to reach something off a high shelf. That's what I would visit you for. Yeah. But I don't know. It's a nice idea. We certainly did it when I was a kid. We'd go see, you know, grandparents and mm-hmm. neighbors.
So I'm also looking at the national days today. There's two national days going on today.
Okay.
The first one, I don't know about it. It's called National Taiwan-on Day. And no, it's not about grabbing a drink on the side kind of thing. It's about tying up your apron to get ready to make stuff for Thanksgiving the next day.
I'm pro apron for sure because I'm very messy.
I never had an apron.
Really?
Yeah.
We need to get you an apron.
I don't do a lot of baking necessarily. I do cooking, but not baking, you know?
Yeah, baking is...
I don't
is,
really deal with a lot of flour and stuff like that.
Baking is generally messier, I think. I mean, I guess.
I'm trying to think what's the messiest thing I've ever made. I can't think of anything. But it's also National Jukebox Day.
Oh, that's cool.
Are you a fan of the jukebox?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's this big, bright, beautiful piece of retro technology.
You know, well, the new ones, like, I don't love the new ones just because, like, I know that you have access to a bunch more songs, but I kind of love the old classic, like, giant machine thing with, like, neon lights and stuff on it.
And there's something magic about having a limited choice, right?
Yeah, then it establishes like favorites at this location kind of thing.
Yeah, or something you haven't heard before rather than, oh, I can play whatever I want from my phone. Well, you always can. Yeah. So, you know, like, oh, what's this one? Yeah, absolutely. So especially I'm thinking of the older ones that are, you know, beautifully designed with the lights and the, you know, usually a very pretty rounded off shape on top. And
And I'm not a huge fan of the new one where like you can pay an extra dollar to get played next.
Yes.
It's like I'm paying $2 for a song then. I'm not doing that.
It's kind of silly.
It is silly. But we love the jukebox.
Yeah.
It's a staple of the nightlife, night scene.
Yeah.
I went to one in Minneapolis that had like a bunch of cool music in it. I can't remember the place, but it had like the B-52s, Iggy Pop, Replacements.
Whoa.
That was a great one.
That's high quality jukebox material right there.
So we would love to hear your jukebox stories. Text us at 288-326-1234. And support comes from AW Research Laboratories in Brainerd, reminding private well owners to test their drinking water annually. Common well contaminants such as bacteria, nitrates, and arsenic are odorless, tasteless, and colorless. More information and test kits available at awlab.com.
Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where Drs. Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
And we receive support from the Watermark Arts Center in downtown Bemidji, with exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. WatermarkArtsCenter.org. Time now for more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Mae Martinez. This week, millions of Americans will be driving home for Thanksgiving, which could mean millions of Americans will be getting car sick. Now, if you're one of those people, Mike Danforth and Ian Shalag from NPR's How to Do Everything podcast are here to help. Mike and Ian, I just thought if we were a rap group, we could be called MIA.
Oh, yeah.
Missed opportunity. All right, so your podcast is all about helping people figure out and navigate everyday tasks. So how did the topic of car sickness come up?
Well, we got a call from our listener, Ellie, who noticed that now that she's in her 20s, she gets car sick really easily. And this didn't happen when she was a kid. She could ride roller coasters over and over again without flinching.
My question is just sort of like, is there a way I could build up that stamina again? Mm. Now, can't look at my phone in the car, or I feel like I get kind of ill feeling and just sort of like, what changed from childhood to now?
That's pretty common. I don't know, A, if you have been on a swing at the playground as a grown man, but it is harrowing.
Yeah, I would need an ER visit immediately after if I ever tried. So how did you go about helping Ellie?
Well, we wanted to find someone with experience in a high motion sickness environment. So we called up beloved Hollywood superstar Kevin Bacon.
He was in the movie Apollo 13, and those scenes where he and Tom Hanks and Bill Paxton are weightless in the spacecraft, they weren't done with CGI. They actually built sets on board the Vomit Comet. That's the airplane NASA uses to simulate weightlessness.
The pilot makes it climb straight up and then straight down. And as you go over the top of what's called a parabola, you create weightlessness for 26 seconds. And once the sets were built up there, we did it 600 times.
What? 600 times?
Yeah. We would do 20 in the morning. Then we would break for lunch.
Oh, yeah, because you need something to barf up later.
Exactly. And then we would do 20 in the afternoon.
So first off, I'm impressed that Kevin Bacon took your call. And second, I mean, it sounds like it's really definitely called the Vomit Comet for a reason. So what advice did Kevin Bacon have for staving off motion sickness?
He told us that NASA gave them pretty powerful anti-nausea drugs, which made them real sleepy. And Tom Hanks and Bill Paxton tried to go without the drugs, and it did not work.
He did say they trained them with some useful advice, though.
We were told not to look from side to side. I remember now, especially on the first few flights, Tom Hanks was in front of me, and I stared a hole in the back of his head. I just remember, I remember the back of his head so well, I could probably draw you a picture of the back of Hanks's head.
If you don't have Tom Hanks sitting in front of you, there is one more good piece of advice. There's a recent study from Frontiers in Human Neuroscience that found listening to soft or joyful music can actually help relieve the symptoms of car sickness.
We wanted to get Ellie a piece of music to help her out whenever she's feeling queasy. So, of course, we called up Kenny G, and Kenny G always provides.
Ellie, I think this is what you need to listen to when you're feeling car sick.
Thank you.
There you go, Ellie. That'll do it for you.
So there you have it. If you feel motion sickness in the car, just stare straight ahead at the person in front of you, preferably if that person is Tom Hanks.
And once you are car sick, you can listen to some soft or joyful music. That'll make you feel better. Or just call Kenny G directly and he'll play you a little something over the phone.
You know, guys, I've always felt that the best advice comes from people with one letter in their name. So thank you, okay. Kenny G, for that. That's Mike Danforth and Ian Chillag from NPR's How to Do Everything podcast. Thank you very much and safe travels.
Thanks, A.
Thanks, A.
Next, we have an NPR investigation of a popular claim on the internet about a famous Christmas song. Gwen Stefani belts it out there. Now, I called it a Christmas song, and that's really the question at hand. Is it really one?
And the reason that comes up is that every year around this time, people circulate the claim that Jingle Bells was actually written as a Thanksgiving song.
What?
Keena Hamill of Boston University is here to put that one to rest.
There are sort of clickbaits that you click on and you see it, and then it says, yeah, it was a Thanksgiving song. And that's all you get. There's no evidence at all.
That claim is apparently just one of those things people say to fill time at the holidays.
Look closely at the dates of the Thanksgiving claims, which are usually at the end of November, and then look closely at the claims of it being a Christmas song, and they're all done in December.
Hamill should know. She is an expert in Jingle Bells. She studied it to help settle a debate between two cities. Savannah, Georgia, and Medford, Massachusetts, both claimed to be the birthplace of the song. She found no evidence to support either city. It was first performed elsewhere.
The answer to that question is in a minstrel hall in Boston in 1857, in September, by the way, of 1857. The
song was originally called One Horse Open Sleigh, written by James Lord Pierpont. Now, you heard her also say minstrel. One Horse Open Sleigh was first performed by white men in blackface.
Hamill says Pierpont was not trying to write a holiday song. He was trying to cash in on a trend.
American minstrelsy was an American industry, and between about 1854 and 1859, sleigh songs were having a moment, and there's many, many listings of songs about sleigh riding. It was a fun mode of transportation. Yes, there were races at times. It's sort of like the way that we have songs about cars in the 1950s.
Turns out the sleigh was a little deuce coupe of its day.
Having made that musical success, the song's author, Pierpont, went south from Boston and joined the Confederate Army during the Civil War. But he left behind this scrap of music that people enjoy in their own way.
Aside from that maybe uncomfortable history of the song, it is a traditional song that has been re-embraced into a tradition that we all sort of enjoy. Or not. Some people probably hate the song.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Love it or hate it, we jingle all the way.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun to ride and sing in a one-horse open sleigh.
Morning edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
Standing in the rain with his head hung low, couldn't get a ticket, it was a sold out show. Heard the roar of the crowd, he could picture the scene, put his ear to the wall,
All right, for this National Jukebox Day, it is Jukebox Hero by Foreigner.
How many guitars did you have?
How many? One guitar.
Oh, yeah, one guitar.
Blew him away.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I love the idea, only one way to go, so he started rocking.
That's like the best storyline, right?
It's a great little story of just like, yeah, rock and roll rules.
It's such a classic. That's, of course, when you said jukebox, it was running through both of our heads.
So I had to play it.
We had another take on that one, though, because we got a text from AJ in Bemidji. Who says, I think Ecto Cooler was the best. You wanted juice box recommendations,
hey,
right? Oh,
we
you got
do love
us.
Ecto Cooler here at KBXC.
I know. I want some Ecto Cooler right now.
I wish I had some right
now. Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone should bring it to their Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow.
Maybe.
Listen, everyone, I brought the Ecto Cooler.
Do they still make it?
I think they brought it back when the Ghostbusters movie came out and then discontinued it again.
Boo.
It is unfortunate. So we've got some Bemidji area school closings going on. Pequot Lakes, Red Lake, and Sabika are all three are 2 hours late. No school today for Bemidji, Bagonegasheg, LaPorte, Monaga, Nevis, North Home, Pine River, Bacchus, Schoolcraft, Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, and Trek North is also off today. So
go build a snowman.
Do you want to be outside in this? It's kind of windy.
It wasn't in my yard. It was nice in my yard.
I finally pulled out the winter coat today.
Yeah.
Had to.
I'm not quite at winter. I'm still in fall. But just because I haven't unpacked, I haven't done the whole tote swap yet. So
see, I keep all my coats in the same closet, so it's a easy breezy switch for me.
Oh, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing for my
I also have my leather jackets in the closet, too.
Yeah.
I wish it was leather jacket weather.
I can wear
it underneath the winter coat, though.
I mean, you could.
Should that be my new thing? I got a members-only leather jacket.
You could be that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's members-only. It never
goes
out of style.
Someone's got to be the guy.
Yeah. Why not you? Step up.
Why not me? So, we would love to hear from you. What are you doing to prepare for tomorrow morning? Are you doing some traveling? Are you going to be having turkey? Is there any weird things you're going to have that your family does as tradition?
Yeah. Are you baking today or... Or what are you doing for prep? Cleaning?
It's Taiwan on day.
Meditating.
Not drinking, though.
Meditating, maybe, in preparation for the family and friends.
See, the part I'm most excited about is movie day afterwards.
Yes.
Friday after Thanksgiving is a movie day for me.
Oh, absolutely. Super cozy time, right? Mm-hmm. Leftovers in the fridge, so don't have to cook. You know, the house probably reasonably clean, at least for me, you know, that whole holiday thing. The day after the holiday is the best because I'm kind of like, wow, I can relax now. We're not hosting this year, but, you know, it'll just be us.
Do you have any Thanksgiving movies that are your favorite?
I do really like Pieces of April.
Oh, with Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes. That's a really, it's not like the most uplifting movie in a way, but there are some really, really beautiful moments in it. And then there's another one with Holly Hunter and Robert Downey Jr. I think it's called Coming Home. And that one is really, really sweet. And there's another actor in it.
Eric Roberts?
No, this is the guy who plays the dad, and he's fantastic, but I can't think of his name right now. Anyway, I like that movie, and I will probably watch it while I'm doing stuff tonight in the kitchen. Yeah.
Trying to think of what I'll watch. Maybe The Last Waltz. That's a good one. I haven't never seen it, so everyone talks about how they always watch it on Thanksgiving, so... Maybe this is the year.
I feel like it would be sad, though.
Why?
Well, because was this when Levon was getting sick, or?
No, it was when, I think Robbie Robertson was just like, hey, we're going to quit the band,
I don't think
the rest of the band knew it was going to be the last band show.
Okay. Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm really, really sensitive these days. So I don't want to watch something that's going to make me cry.
It's
going to
make you cry with joy once you see Van Morrison get up there with the band doing Caravan. That song's awesome.
Yeah.
La, 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 la. La, 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 la.
The face is very Van Morrison. I wish you all could see it. I'm looking forward to just making a few like small things just for us and just chilling and watching the parade.
Yeah,
the Macy
do you watch
parade.
The Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade?
We do. It's a lot different than it was when I was a kid. There's a lot more like in your face kind of advertising now.
Shy away from it.
No, it was always about advertising, but it's really, really, really about advertising now.
And then you also see all these like music people that like you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Of just like, oh, this must be like, oh, they were on a Disney show and now they're trying to do a pop solo career.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And they're lip syncing on a float.
Ugh, it's rough.
Miracle on 34th Street is kind of a Thanksgiving movie.
All right, so now we're getting into a different territory here.
No.
Because